So welcome everybody. I'd like to thank you all for coming tonight. Obviously we have a special guest, and I just wanted to briefly introduce Linda Tolbert-Ricochet. It is a special honor for us to have you here tonight. Just to give you some perspective, who basically comes from the same root as all of the teachings that we received here in Shambhala. So, you know, you can imagine someone who knew Trungpa Rinpoche before there were any Shambhala centers. So, it's just a great opportunity to get teachings from kind of the same source as where all the teachings came from. So, Rinpoche, thank you for coming tonight. And, please. Please teach us that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I've been asked to say something about the Sangha and community vision. I'm sure you know about Sangha. So I'll say a few words. I think you know more or less. And if you have any questions, then we will discuss. I think sometimes it's more useful to spend more time on discussion. Then I said something, I don't know where it's going and whether it's something that you want to hear or not, or something is useful or not, so sometimes it's not useful. Sangha is a Sanskrit word which is a very common word, actually. It just means kind of an organization, actually. Sangha almost means organization, assembly, people coming together to have a Sangha means to come together. Yeah. But this was given a little bit different meaning, I think, in Buddhism. When Buddha talked about Buddha Dharma and Sangha, the three refuges, Buddha is basically teacher. Very good teacher, excellent teacher, who is awakened, or awoken, who has experiential understanding how to transform himself or herself, and who knows how to teach that or show that to others. So therefore, Buddha is someone who is kind of what can you say? highest example of transformation, and thereby a true teacher who can explain how to do that, how to transform yourself. Dharma is basically that experience. The experience how to experience ourselves on, you know, knowing how things are, and thereby how to live, or how to you can almost say solve all our problems by understanding how to perceive things and how to react to the situations from ourselves, from within ourselves. However difficult or however negative situation we are in, that I can remain free from the effects of those situations and remain stable, happy, joyful, enthusiastic, and also, you know, keeping the integrity of compassion and wisdom. So that those kind of experience, somebody who has that experience is called Dharma. And that's what we call as the realization Dharma. And so therefore, when somebody has that, then one can also use speech and other means to transmit that experience to the others. And that is called the teaching Dharma. So we have two Dharmas. One is the real Dharma, or the ultimate Dharma, that is the experience of a Buddha. And then the teaching Dharma, that is the skillful ways by which, you know, in many different ways, the Buddha transmits, or try to express, try to teach those experiences to other people, so that they might also learn how to experience that Dharma, ultimate Dharma. Now the Sangha is the people who would like to understand and learn those Dharma, and not only just learn, but also try to use those ways and means on themselves, so that they can transform themselves and become a better human being, and then slowly, you know, learn how to transform themselves and awaken their own, basic goodness, you can call it if you like, their own positive qualities, which are always there, but, you know, it's kind of not totally, awake, not totally discovered. So therefore, Sangha, from Buddhist point of view, is very, very important. Because Buddha gave, historically, all his teachings to the Sangha, means to everybody who wanted to learn. And when Buddha was dying, when he was passing away in Kushinagar, he told that now I am passing away, and if anybody wants to ask any questions, they can ask. And many people asked, who is the person that you would entrust as your, like, regent, or who would be the person who would kind of represent you, and that we can all follow? Buddha said, nobody. I've given my teachings to my Sangha, and my Sangha is my representative. Sangha will hold my Dharma, and Sangha will pass on the Dharma to the next generation of Sangha. So there is nobody. I don't want to name anybody as my regent, or as my, representative, or as my kind of holder of the lineage. The Sangha is mine. So Sangha is the, and Sangha, so therefore, Sangha is the whole, in one way, the whole community of students of Buddha. In another way, every individual who earnestly studies the Dharma and earnestly try to practice and use those teachings on themselves and try to live by those, by teachings, that's Sangha. So Sangha can be anybody who is genuinely studying the Dharma and practicing it. And also the anybody together is also Sangha. So Sangha is that. And Sangha is, the Sangha is, as I said before, sometimes means a group of people, but sometimes it also means one individual. Because in Buddhist sutras, they said that when Buddha first became enlightened, It said that there was a sound in the sky, that now there is one Sangha on the earth. And then when his first five students became arhats, attained arhathood, then it is said that there was a sound in the sky, that now there are six Sangha in this world. So therefore, Sangha sometimes can mean even one person, if that person has truly the experience of the Dharma. But generally, it is a group of people. Buddha said that when he talked about the four pillars of Sangha, the four pillars of Sangha, he meant that the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, means like, now they call it monastic, but you know, those who take on the, you know, certain rules, certain discipline, and live by them, are the, you know, monks and the nuns, male and female monastic sangha. And then male and female non-monastic sangha. Sometimes people nowadays say lay, but lay, I don't know whether lay is the right word for that or not. But it is those people who do not become monks and nuns, but they practice Dharma and take like the minimum, like five vows, something like that. Not necessarily all five, but you know, there are many different levels of upasaka. You can take one, two, three, four, five, or all of them. So those not monastic but non-monastic, I think easier. You have another word? Civil society, sangha, for the male and female. These four, Buddha described as the four pillars of sangha. And he told that any place, any area of the world where you find this four type of sangha, then I consider that my dharma is established there, and it's stabilized. But this sangha sometimes also said that if there are more than four members of sangha together, you can call it also a sangha, like bhikshu sangha. So there you can call also few people together is also a sangha. And the Vinaya is a very, very long code of conduct, you can call it if you like, or constitution, if you want to call it. It's very, very long. It's 12 big volumes. That's the, you know, like Buddha's, you can call it you can call it like the his the how to conduct in a sangha, how to conduct by each individual in the sangha, he described in the Vinaya. Why it's so long? Why it can't be just, you know, some numbers of, you know, do's and don'ts? Because it's not like that. The Vinaya should be not interesting, because it says you do this, or don't do this. But it's not like that. It's the most interesting book, because it's all stories. Buddha didn't make the rules. Like, you know, one day he discovered these are the rules, you know. This is what we should do. These are things, not like commandments, you know. It's not like that. He didn't make any rules in the beginning, even for the monks and nuns. And somebody wanted to come and say, I want to become your follower, your monk, you know. I want to follow you. And he said, okay, come. And he became a monk. That was called the ceremony of come. He just said, come, and that was it. That was the ordination, the first ordination for these monks was come ordination. And he just said come, and that's done. And then there was no rules. But rules became when somebody did something very wrong, and then he said, no, you can't do that. If you do this, then you can't be a monk, for instance. It started with not taking, you know, somebody else's property without their permission. We can call it stealing, whatever you call it. Because one summer, then, you know, because Buddha didn't, he was traveling all the time, barefoot. He had just, you know, his one set of clothes and a baking bowl, and then any place he went, in the morning he went and got some food from whoever gave him. He ate it before noon, and then again he walked, and then if somebody wanted to listen to his teachings, they should request, and he would give some teachings, otherwise not. And then, you know, his followers followed him, and, you know, they just asked questions, and he would answer. and that was the way. But during the monsoon, you know, in India, in the summer there was monsoon when it rained a lot. It's happening even nowadays, same monsoon. So during monsoon time, for 3 months, he would not travel. And he would usually stay one place, and then his monks will also do the same. So therefore, he was going to stay for one monsoon. And they wanted to build some huts, some, you know, some shade, you know, what you call it, shade, some house for the Buddha and his monks. And his monks went out to find wood. And then there was the lots of wood, very, very, very good wood, very, you know, best kind of wood. But it was, you know, the people there was guarding this and said that this belongs to the king, so you cannot take it. But they said, oh, king is the scrutiny of Buddha. He wouldn't mind, we take it. So they took the wood from these people almost forcefully, even if they said, you can't take it. And then they tried to use it to build, you know, huts for the Buddha and his followers. And when Buddha heard about this, he said, this is wrong. You cannot do it. If you take anything that does not belong to you, or that's not given permission, who owns them, if you take anything, then you are no longer a monk. So this way, you know, all the rules were made. So therefore there's lots of stories and all kinds of things, especially there were six very naughty monks, and there were six even more naughty nuns, and then that made them lots of rules. I wouldn't talk about that, you know. So that's how the Vinaya came about, but that's not part of the thing I want to talk to. So this is, you know, how the, you know, Sangha. Because Sangha is the people who would have the same direction, same intention, same kind of aspirations, and would like to work together on that path. That's the Sangha. And it's not, you know, from the Buddhist point of view, actually, Sangha is not just an organization. It's not organization. It is the principles, you know, the principles and aspiration, the same kind of inspirations, same principles, same, what can you say, you want to work on, you know, anybody. That makes the Sangha. That's why, you know, if there is a monastery or there is a group of people, yes, there can be a Sangha. But this, people, is not only your Sangha. Anybody, anywhere, anywhere in the whole world who is on that same, similar direction, similar aspiration, similar kind of direction is also your Sangha, the same Sangha. So therefore, you know, first, you know, the Vinaya. In Buddhism, generally, Vinaya is the basic rules, how you, you know, you can call it, sometimes people call it Sila, how to live in a positive way. And there, the Vinaya is basically not so much what positive deeds you do. It's more like how that I would refrain from doing negative things. That's basically the Vinaya, you know. I refrain from like stealing, robbing. I refrain from killing human beings or human beings to be. I refrain from deceiving people and, you know, telling lies. I refrain from committing sexual misconduct and things like that. Or I refrain from getting intoxicated. These kind of things. You know, these kind of things. So when people, you know, take certain disciplines, or then anybody who has done that, who is going that way, is the Sangha. And then there is, you know, there is Bodhisattva. There is a Bodhisattva. It also has the Vinaya. Also has the, what you can say, Sila. Then Vajrayana also has the Sila. So therefore, you know, anybody who's trying to practice this and train in these three things, Sila, meditation, samadhi, and prajna, wisdom. So this is the Sangha. So therefore, you know, anybody who is working on our own transformation, for our own good, and for the good of others, is Sangha. So the importance is that if we, you know, if I want to become better, if I want to transform myself, if I want to learn how to become better human being, how to transform myself, how to learn how to face, you know, difficulties and problems, situations in life, you know, I need to learn it from someone who knows how to do that. So therefore, you know, Sangha is the one from which you learn. It's not necessarily one person, but it could be one person also. It could be from the group of people. So like here we are, I don't know how many people. So you are the Sangha. So, within your Sangha, you have received teachings from your teachers, from, you know, Chujam Trumpa Rinpoche. Some of you met him and you have received teachings. And some of you have not met him, but you have heard about him, his teachings. But that teaching that you received is not just from Trumpa Rinpoche. Trumpa Rinpoche was the one who brought this teaching to you, but he was trained by his teachers, his masters. He didn't just make up something, you know. He received those teachings. He was trained, and, you know, and from that training, from that understanding, from that realization and experience, he tried to express, guide you in the best way he thought would be useful and beneficial for you. So the words he might have said would not maybe exactly the same words that he received from his teachings, but it's the same experience, coming from the same understanding. So therefore, you know, he tried to make it as, you know, as really, you know, as relatable, as more accessible, as more, you know, according to your own way of being, according to your culture, according to your language, as much as possible, and therefore that was his teaching. But it is coming from there. And now you can do the same. So there must be many people here among you who also passing on the teachings. And they try to understand and experience those teachings and then share those teachings to other people. So therefore, so that is how the, you know, the Dharma is transmitted, the wisdom is transmitted, and we learn from that. But these are not just words. If it was just words, then it's all there in the books. All the teaching of the Buddha is already, you know, transcribed and written down, you know, first in Sanskrit, then first translated in different languages, Pali, and Tibetan, Chinese, and all this. Now it's also very much quickly coming in English. The whole Ganju is being translated, and more than half is already done. But it's not just the words, it's the, you know, because we learn from how people do, how people, you know, live, how people, not from what they say. How do we learn from our parents? Not what they say, but how they do. No? So therefore, even if they say, don't do this, we will do that. Because they don't, they do that. Don't smoke. Then you almost teach them to smoke. sometimes saying don't do is almost saying do it. Recently, you know, my kind of, there are lots of people who is trying to make my body fit, you know. I am lazy, you know, I'm called Lazy Lama. I don't know if you read some of my Lazy Lama books or not, but I call myself Lazy Lama. And they said that you should do some walks and some stretching and some exercise, you know, for my own good. And I don't do it. I don't do it. Although I know it's good to do it. You know, I really know it's good to do it, but I don't do it. So recently I was telling them, maybe you should tell me not to do this. Then maybe I'll do it. Because I'm a little bit like that, you know. If you said, don't do it, maybe. You know, it can be tempting to do it, you know. There's kind of I don't know if you know this story. It's an African story. You know how some tribe in Africa are in very, very like dry desert area, and only those people there, living there, know how to find water. Yeah. And they don't tell anybody, but they know how to do that. And how do you do it? You know the story? They learn it from a monkey. Because they try to find if there are some animals, and then if there are some monkeys, you know, some type of monkeys, living in, you know, sometimes these animals live even in very, very like dry places, and there's no water, you can't find any water and things like that. But they survive, and only they know where it is. So these people go, and when there's a monkey around, they go and make a hole in something. You know, in the land, you know. And then inside that, they put some pebbles, some rocks. So the monkey thinks, what is it they're doing? You know, because monkey is like us also, very inquisitive, very like, you know, lots of thoughts. So they go look and they say, oh, I shouldn't do this. These human beings are very treacherous. They always bring something bad. I shouldn't go near them. But then they say, maybe there's something interesting, you know. And slowly they go. And they found a hole. They put their hands in. Little bit, and they say, no, I shouldn't do this. There must be something really bad, because they don't do anything that's good and useful and beneficial. And then there must be something interesting. They put it in their hands, they take out, nothing happens. They put in, take out, nothing happens. Then they put in, and there's something there. They hold it. Try to take out, they can't take out. because now they are holding that thing. And so this become, you know, not just the hand, but fist. So it stuck there. Then they become panicky and tries to, you know, take out. At that time, the man so far was just in a small, in a kind of a corner, just sleeping, or just pretend to be sleeping. He just come up and get the monkey. And then he ties the monkey on something and put some salt in front of him. Then the monkey says, you know, I shouldn't eat this. Because of these human beings, I got caught. Now if I eat this, something terrible is going to happen to me. It's not good. But then he touches this, and he wants to touch it and see what it tastes. He tastes, and it's salty. It's very nice taste. And then he eats a little bit. It's very nice. Eats a little more. It's still very nice. Nothing happens. And then he eats more and more. And it's so nice that he keeps on eating. And after some time, he feels really thirsty. Now he takes more salt and he becomes more thirsty. And then after some time, he is so thirsty that he can't, you know, he can't. He's dying of thirst. And then he struggles to get out. And then the man knows when to release this monkey. So he releases the monkey, and monkey runs. Now he's so thirsty, he wouldn't have otherwise revealed where the water is. But he cannot, you know, he cannot. He's so thirsty that he cannot stop. He knows that he's giving out his most important secret. But he runs and runs and runs where the water is. The human being runs after him. And then he finds out where the water is. Yeah? So that's how human beings are. And that's how every animal is. So, I don't know why I told this story. Anyway, it's like that. You know, we know what we should not do. I was trying to say something about how we learn, you know. But anyway, now I forgot exactly. But this is, you know, so it's not, oh yes, it's not just talking about knowing intellectually, but, you know, learning and walking the talk. What they say? Walking the talk. Talking the walk. No. Walk the talk. So if we can do what, you know, what we say should do, if we try to do it and live by that way, that is the best way of teaching, no? That is how you actually, you know. So therefore, that is also, you know, if the Sangha, if somebody in the Sangha, if some people in the case, you know, is walking the talk or living what, then it becomes a very good example for the rest of the people. You know? So therefore, we can learn from. We learn more from how people do, not from how people say. So therefore, what we have to try to do is not just know what to say or understand, but try to live what we learn. Then we are a Sangha. So therefore, if you become a real Sangha member, you become practicing. You are practicing Dharma. You are living Dharma. You become a better human being. So therefore, Sangha is very important. Of course, nobody is perfect. We are all samsari. We have lots of negative emotions. The Indians, the Hindus, maybe you can call it, Indians have a way of saying that in the golden age, they say, there was evil and there was good. The demons and evil lived in another planet, and good lived in this planet. Then the next, second kind of turning of the kalpa, they talk about the four stages. Second stage came. And then they said that the evil and the good and evil, the good were also there in the same planet, and the evil was also in the same planet, and they were in fighting, in war. They gave the example of Ramayana, and the Rakshas were there in Lanka, and then they were fighting. And then in the third part of the, they said, now the good and evil were both in the same family. And that's why in the Mahabharata was a story of fighting within the family, Pandavas and Kauravas. So therefore, it's the And then in the Kali Yuga, the Dark Age, they say the good and evil are both in each person. So all of us has both the evil and good in ourselves. So therefore, it's going on, the fighting all the time. You call them Indians, but it's not really Indians, the native people from America, they used to say that, in each person there was two wolves, one good one and one bad one. And the one that you feed would become the most powerful. So that's what we, so we have negative side, we have lots of negative emotions and reactions and negative, habitual tendencies, very strong, almost addiction. But we also have, basic good nature, basic, Buddha nature, all of us have we have also kindness, compassion, and wisdom. So therefore, you know, the main thing is that we need to learn to bring out, awaken our positive, you know, nature, and then let go of the negative side. If we can do that, then we are, you know, practicing Dharma. If we don't do that, then we are not practicing Dharma. You know? So therefore, so we always have, you know, sometimes some weakness, some problems, sometimes more kind of inspired. So when there is a Sangha, then we can help each other. One day I am having a kind of little bit difficult time. I am more, you know, I need help, inspiration, and, you know, support. Then those other people can do that. Another time, I'm more inspired, I'm more positive. Some other people are a little bit more, you know, more low. Then I can, we can help each other. We can, so that is the Sangha, you know. So if we all have this kind of, the right kind of aspiration, what we want to do, what we want to work for, you know. So that's why, you know, when we talk about the visions, the vision is that, you know. Like, I have heard that Thumba Rinpoche was talking about the Shambhala vision. I thought he's just talking about bodhicitta, not calling it bodhicitta, because bodhicitta is kind of sounds a little bit more like a, you know, more like a religion or some kind of another, you know, another culture and things like that. But he called it Shambhala, sun, something like that. But it is, you know, to understand, to bring up our aspiration of kindness, aspirations of courage, aspiration to work for the benefit of the whole humanity and for living beings. And, you know, to actually try to kind of transform, you can call it, try to become a warrior of compassion. Yeah. So that's the vision. You know? So therefore, if more and more people become a true participant in this vision, then each of us will be benefited from that. But the whole world will be benefited from that. Because, you know, the more we, our aspiration, our, you know, how I want, what is the main thing I want, you know, what is the most important kind of aspiration or, you know, goal I have. If that becomes like, do something that's useful, that's helpful, that's beneficial for all the people and also for myself, if that becomes the most, you know, kind of ultimate goal, then that person cannot do something totally negative, you know. So has has to do something good for you and good for others. You know, cannot bring evil on the people, cannot, you know, cannot make a war, cannot, you know, do some totally unjust thing. But if, you know, if I don't have that, then, you know, I may just think about my own, how I, you know, it could be. But, and that could be actually the best thing for me too, but we don't sometimes know. You know, I think that if I get lots of things, I become very powerful or rich, then that's my goal. You know? There was this film I saw, the English film. Usually I don't like English films, but I like this one. You know, the, what to call it? 007?
James Bond.
James Bond. I like James Bond. It's not just only because there's beautiful girls. Also, there was one, it's very active, you know. It's, this one film I saw, I don't know what it's called. You know, it was a very, very intelligent doctor. Maybe you have seen him. You know? And then he was very intelligent, very, you know, resourceful. What he wanted to do, first he made, you know, a kind of very secure place under the sea that, you know, even there was a nuclear war, it would not affect. And then he's trying to make a war between Russia and America so that the whole world will be killed. Everybody on the earth will be killed except himself when he goes down. And then he thinks that he can rule the whole world. Of course, because of the, you know, the skillful means, the very brave action of the, what is his name?
James Bond.
It didn't happen. That's the story. You know the story? What is it called? I was thinking at that time, you know, when I was saying this, how misguided people can become with greed. I was thinking, if I got the whole world for myself and there was nobody even to show off to, would I be very happy? You know? Most of the time I need lots of things because, you know, I show off to the people, no? I'm so rich, I'm so powerful, so that people look at me and say, ah, you know. I don't have anybody to show off to because everybody is dead. So even if I had like 1,000 houses, where would I sleep? I can't even sleep in, you know, in two different beds at the same time. So, you know, I was thinking, you know, people can be so out of reason, or so out of, you know, what would I do with the whole world, even if I had it, you know? So the greed can become so, you know, so bad that I don't mind killing everybody because then I have it, but I have it, you know, I can't even keep. So this kind of, there are lots of this kind of wrong, you know, not good for me, but thinking that it's good for me. Very stupid kind of ways of our, you know, habitual tendencies. So we need to understand, and we need to learn what's really good for me and what's really not good for me. And so therefore, when we understand this, then, you know, our life becomes much more meaningful, much more, you know, beneficial, much more happier. And also, if we can really go deeper, we can actually, you know, totally transform ourselves in such a way that we are not affected by any problems and difficulties that we usually face. So those kind of understandings, if we can, you know, develop and share and bring together, then Sangha and community and vision will become. It doesn't need to be ism, it doesn't need to be Buddhism, it doesn't need to be anything like that, but it's just basic kind of, you know, things like that, understanding, wisdom. Wisdom and compassion is the main thing. So therefore, you know, the Sangha is a very important, what can you say, element of that. So that's the general idea. But it's not necessarily that you have to all be together all the time, but, you know, you need to have a kind of a basic broad way, and then learn from each other, try to exercise kindness, compassion, and try to, you know, understand the true wisdom, you know, which is something I don't see too much mentioned even in the universities and, you know, very advanced kind of institutes of learning. Don't see anything. The only thing I hear about is how to get a job, very well paid job, and that's very important. But I think, you know, the wisdom is something very much, you know, something that really transforms ourselves. But that is based on kindness and compassion, because otherwise we will be only doing something that is only to gratify our emotions and kind of egoistic ambitions, which doesn't really bring true happiness. You know, that's why. But I don't know. I said I don't want to talk too much, but I've talked too much. So, any questions? Yes?
I'm not sure if this is a question or an observation, but when Buddhism came to North America, at least in the context of this center, came through Trigyam Trungpa, and in order to get teachings, everybody became Buddhist. You know, certain, you know, you had certain transmissions, and so the Sangha was very much a Buddhist Sangha.
Yes.
And I think what you're suggesting is that Sangha now is perhaps a broader word to include anyone who has a genuine longing to wake up. I guess what I'm saying is people aren't becoming Buddhists anymore.
You know, I think people suffer and they want to meditate. As far as this center goes, the more Buddhist we present, the less people come. It doesn't mean that we don't present Dharma, but the particular flavor, the flavors, in the same way as you change one of the words because you said it might sound too Buddhist or so. I guess it's sort of a comment, too, that how to present the Dharma in a way that still addresses people's suffering when people don't want to be Buddhist anymore.
Yes, that's, I think, very important. But, you know, this is, that's the... generally speaking, you know, when I study Buddhism, I never thought I'm only studying Buddhism. I thought I tried to study and practice and learn something that would transform me, you know? And that I read books from other teachers and masters, like Bible. I read Bible quite a lot, actually. Not because I want to study Christianity, but I want to study English. And people told me that if you really want to learn English, you have to study Bible. And it was very true, actually. Bible is the best way to learn English. It's short sentences and very nice. It's very, very nice. Only other person I found who writes English in the same way was Mahatma Gandhi. He also studied lots of Bible, it seems. He said also. So, you know, it's a very good way to learn English, but by learning English, I also learned some teachings from Jesus. And I was very impressed. I was very, you know, I'm sure he was a great bodhisattva or something like that. And, you know, and I had no problem with that, you know. And so, I mean, whoever, most of the great masters of the world are like that. They teach, you know, they teach what they think would be useful for the people to bring kindness, compassion, and all kind of things. But then, of course, it becomes an ism, you know, it becomes you know the story? You want the story? Another story? I'm getting old, you know. The devil. The word I want to... I must find this word first. Otherwise, I can't... okay. I found it. You know, there was... the devil and his assistant were watching. The devil was watching the person very intently. This person was walking up and walking down, walking up, walking down. The devil was really completely intensely looking at this person. And his assistant said, why are you looking at this person so much? Why are you And he said, well, he's about to find the truth. He's about to find the truth. And this, his assistant heard that, you know, the truth, if somebody finds the truth, that will shake the kingdom of the devils. So he said, maybe, you know, then it's very dangerous for us, isn't it? Because I heard that if somebody finds the truth, then that will shake the land or throne of the devil. And he said, no, don't worry. And he was looking and looking and looking. And then something, some flash of light came from this person, and he became something very like enlightened. And then the devil's assistant was very shocked. He said, well, did you find it? He said, yes. But you don't seem to be so worried. It doesn't matter. He said, why not? Because the moment he passes on to the next person, they will make a dogma of it.
Dogma.
Dogma.
They will make a dogma of it. So therefore, it doesn't matter. That's why, you know, we have lots of dogma. And we make lots of dogma, and it's very easy to make a dogma of the truth, even from Buddhism. You know? So therefore, you know, that's what we have to try to, it's very difficult, but we have to try to pass on that wisdom to the people without as much less dogma as possible. And if we can do that, then that will be very useful, and that will be also, you know, good. If you just make it as a dogma, then even if we can pass on, it will not be so useful. That's the problem. That's the problem. So don't ask me how to do that, because I don't know.
Earlier you were talking about the four pillars of the Sangha.
Hmm?
Earlier you were talking about the four pillars of the Sangha.
Yes.
The male monastics and female monastics, and male non-monastics and female non-monastics, and those being the four pillars. I was wondering why they're considered the four pillars, and why gender is a factor in the...
I think because it was good to have, it was necessary to have both genders equally, you know, important. I think maybe that was maybe what he wanted to say.
One of the things that I find myself faced with a lot these days is, because there's so much polarization in the world, and, you know, I have some people people who are close to me who hold very opposite views about the world, which I think is fine, but quite often what they present me with is this really vitriolic anger.
Huh?
Anger, just rage.
They make you angry.
They present me with their anger.
Yeah.
They are very angry. They share different types of media with me that's very, very angry, and all that kind of thing. And especially because these are people who I care about, I find it very concerning. And so I wonder how to respond to that.
Yes, yes. I know that. Because there are lots of things happening, which is not right, not just, lots of atrocities, lots of, negative things, lots of suffering and things like that happening. That's bad, that's very bad. But, this is also happening because of the same emotions, They're doing these negative things because of anger and hatred, because of too much maybe greed and attachment, lots of jealousy or envy, and lots of arrogance, lots of misunderstanding. And so therefore, yourself becoming full of that cannot help to make it less, So this is, I think, very important, because if somebody is angry, you should not get angry. It will not make this other person less angry, So therefore, we need to somehow, it's not easy, but we need to somehow understand that, you cannot, the hatred begets hatred, not love. So if you have too much anger, too much hatred, then it doesn't bring more love and more kindness, So therefore, it's not through hatred you can control or you can get rid of these negative things. I think this is something important, Of course, we don't want these negative things happening, But my becoming angry and really upset and only just, it's not, it's actually becoming more. Everybody becomes very angry, then the whole world will become, like a fire. It will be too much. It will not bring any peace, any solution. There need to be more people who are not, who are concerned, but not angry, who are concerned, but not just one side, who have more understanding. Because more kind of, it's not kind of ignoring things, or not involving, but, with kindness, with compassion, with understanding, and trying to bring some in yourself, both, you know, more positive kindness and compassion for all, for both sides, for all sides, and try to, you know, bring that to everybody. Because as long as people's mind becomes more calm and more, you can't make them not fight. You can't say that you should not be angry, you should not fight, you should not do negative things. It wouldn't help. If you make them understand that both sides, everyone, if they, you know, if you need something good happening in the world, you need to bring loving kindness and compassion. And if more and more people have loving kindness, that will bring more and more peace. No, there's nobody in the world who doesn't want to experience kindness. No, everybody needs kindness and compassion. Nobody wants to be unkind, to experience unkindness and things like that. So therefore, you know, anybody who is doing negative things, have done some negative things towards each other, fightings and wars, because they felt hatred and not because they felt love. So therefore, you know, this is something that everybody needs to understand. And only that way you cannot bring peace just by war. You have to bring peace by love. So, thank you so much.
Teaching us the dharmas of James Bond. And thank you again, and we certainly